Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Only 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming later in this episode. Buddy, we got a good one for you today. Hit us with Ye Olde Beats.
It is Spencer, the entrepreneur Dinwiddie. And as we move through the offseason, we're talking what it looks like for Spencer Dinwiddie, the options for the Brooklyn Nets on the table to move him, get assets, re-sign him? Probably not. But we'll get into some of the details, hopefully not too into the weeds, as we lay out what the Nets are losing in Spencer Dinwiddie and how they try to move forward this offseason and continue to form a championship team.
Oh, it's all about the entrepreneur today and how the entrepreneur can continue to help the Brooklyn Nets. We're going to get into it all, but first, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Brooklyn, yo. All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast and the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. I'm Doug Norrie, owner-operator DFSR.com. If you need a projection for FanDuel or DraftKings, any sport, head on over to DFSR.com. That's Adam Armbrecht, keeping New York City on lock, voice of the Brooklyn Nets over on Sportscaster, also the host of the One Giant podcast, covering the New York football Giants with his boy, Andy Mack. Buddy, how are we doing? Are we ready to talk a little Spencer Dinwiddie today?
On the morning of the NBA Finals, from a Brooklyn Nets perspective, well, listen, I'll be entertained, but more importantly, Spencer Dinwiddie, next phase, big three, check that box on Monday. Now it's about, obviously, maybe the most important piece of the offseason for the Brooklyn Nets from the standpoint of what could become of the process of Spencer Dinwiddie keeping, moving, signing, trading, all the mechanisms there within. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. I think first and foremost is probably, as we did during the year, not lamenting losing Spencer Dinwiddie at this point, but just establishing what Spencer Dinwiddie is as a player relative to the market at the guard or backup guard position, depending on how we look at him. But the Nets are losing a quality player, and replacing that is not going to be an easy task for them.
Yeah, Dinwiddie's a really interesting he's just a really interesting player. In some ways it's hard to evaluate him. It's in terms of like his overall worth. I think it's clearly more than what he just opted out of. So I think they're pretty much universal agreement about that. But he's had such an interesting career so far in that, you know, he was kind of a nobody on Detroit. Take that with the spirit's intended. He didn't really play on Detroit. Comes to the Nets and just improves every single year to the point where in 2019-2020 season, that ended up being, you know, shortened obviously because of the pandemic, he plays a lot of games, and he's really good. He basically carries the team after Kyrie gets injured, but then doesn't go to the bubble. But, you know, during that time, he was a kind of like basically a volume shooter, was taking 16 shots a game, shooting threes, but really not making that many of them. Although I'm going to kind of give him a pass on the field and the 3-point percentage, because a lot of them were just very tough shots by the nature of what the Nets were running on offense that season. It was basically just him and LeVert and no one else that could really dribble on the rest of the team. Right. And so he was forced into a lot of, he had no problem taking them. So he's very confident when it comes to them, but he's forced into like these step back threes, contested stuff. So not a full pass on the 31% for 3-point shooting in that season, but enough of one, because I think if we, you know, as we did watch every game, you would see these weren't just like spot up open threes that he was missing. A lot of them were very, very heavily contested. And then last year,
yeah.
And then, you know, we get into the season in terms of last year where he starts and people are wondering, oh, you know, can he be, you know, they're going to start him and Kyrie. How's that going to work? Is it going to work in terms of both of their skill sets? And he was fully bought in on giving it a try, obviously, and then only plays three games and goes down to the ACL and never gets to even, he never steps on the court, obviously, with the big three at all. So it's just a very weird timeline so far for him in terms of how to try to evaluate him, because he's never like played on a team so far that, like going to a much better team than he's played with, because you're like, oh, he played for the Nets, but he never played with any version of the Nets that was going to win a first-round playoff series or something. You know what I mean? Like, he was never on that version. So he's a little weird to evaluate to me.
Yeah, well, it's funny because, as you mentioned, you know, Detroit. So what Spencer Dinwiddie has accomplished to this point of his career is impressive, because he went from being a relative obscure nobody on a bad team in the NBA to getting to a place where he has dramatically increased his value. But as we've often talked about, what your stats look like on an average team or in the Eastern Conference, you know, an eighth seed team, it's different when you get on a team with superstars or even just, you know, better talented players, where you say, okay, your role needs to not only be reduced, but also you need to control what your game looks like, as opposed to most of what we got in very positive sample sizes of him in Brooklyn was go ahead, grip it and rip it. Like you said, hey, listen, take some, these are going to be some bad threes that you're going to take, but we're kind of at this place where we just need offense and you're clearly capable of it. It's just a matter about where should we be capping this well that we're tapping into. And at least at that point, there was no reason to cap. Keep going, see how deep you can go. The funny thing, interesting thing I'll say is, I went back to 2018-19 just to look at where he kind of stacks up as far as even in a year where maybe some of his shots weren't the best. And this is grain of salt stuff, but Raptor rating-wise, he was 18th in the league at a positive 3.4, wedging himself in between the likes of Paul George, Chris Middleton, and Jason Tatum. Also Donovan Mitchell. The last two, he's ahead of, slightly in those margins. So when you talk about a backup or a bench leader or a key contributor to a team, Spencer Dinwiddie is more than capable offensively of not just carrying a load, but being a valuable piece. It now just comes down to where does he fit into and what does the value on the market look like as far as a team that wants to bring in that piece. But it's a shame, I think, just from a Nets standpoint, that we didn't get that this year. He was still going to leave either way. It's not like if he had been healthy and the Nets saw it, then they were just going to back up the truck for him. I don't think. But it would have been great to see how he integrated with Harden, with KD, with Kyrie, just from a personal standpoint, because that would have set the table for his market, maybe to even to exceed what is the, you know, 16 to 20 million that a lot of people think he can earn depending on where he lands.
Yeah, and I want to qualify something I said before. I said he was tough to evaluate. It wasn't because I don't think he's good. I think he's excellent. I mean, the worst kept secret in the world was that he was going to opt out of this player option, even right, with the ACL. Like, it was so clear that he was going, that player option was never going to stand up based on what he had already accomplished on the court, even with the, which was really a testament to how well he had played, because even with, in this day and age, ACL tears just don't mean what they used to mean. Even with the ACL tear, playing only three games, everyone was like, "Oh, yeah, he's opting out. He's one of the better free agents." You know what I mean? It was just one of these things that was basically already known. So I only meant it from a talent evaluation piece, because he just, like I said, has had a weird career in terms of timing so far, and that's it. It's just a timing thing. Like, and actually, I wonder too. And we're going to get into some of the options for him here in a minute, because there's it's interesting. It's kind of complicated, just so everyone's kind of going to give everyone a quick update on that real quick. It's not as cut and dry as you might think it is. But I do actually wonder if actually the ACL piece, like, I wonder if he would have been in the James Harden trade, you know? Like, I wonder about some of these things that had happened over the course of the year, where if he is healthy, one, you know, if he's healthy and the team's playing really well and they found the kind of a match between him and Kyrie in the backcourt, one, maybe they're not as incentivized to go out and get Harden right away, and they look at the LeVert and Dinwiddie thing as kind of working, and, you know, like, there's a lot of just weird what ifs that happen with that injury, because the second he gets hurt, they lose that secondary ball handler that they kind of really needed. By the way, like, they really could have needed him when you get the word that he could have come back for that, you know, that he was so close to coming back around that Bucks series, you're like, oh, we needed that. You know, like, we just, that was like one thing they just kind of really needed. Yeah, I do wonder, like, the what if around him tearing the ACL around the Harden trade. Like, I wonder if he would have been even on the Nets because the salaries and all that stuff might have ended up matching pretty well. You know what I mean? So it's just very interesting kind of when he tears the ACL, there is a domino effect to think of what happens with the Nets and how they sort of view their future, specifically around the backcourt.
Yeah, would Jared Allen maybe have been a Net just for the remainder of last season if Spencer Dinwiddie shows higher value and you can move him? And then you mentioned Caris LeVert. It's funny because, funny not funny, that when Dinwiddie goes down, then it also impacts what LeVert's value is in the short term to the Nets. Because now you have a guy that you don't, he's not an on-ball guy. He's not going to handle it coming up the court. And you want him to be this second unit blended piece, but you also wanted to have the reliable point guard next to him. And by the way, two players that had been together for a couple of years and knew each other. So you had all this chemistry kind of below your two superstars in KD and Kyrie. Then Dinwiddie goes down. Now you're losing one of your other scorers, obviously. Certainly, arguably, maybe the, depending on how you felt about Caris LeVert, the third or fourth best scorer on the team. Now he's gone. You start to think about making these moves, and then you also don't have as many players to pull from when you go to execute a trade for James Harden. So, yeah, it's funny, man. I know we talked about it, and a lot of fans, or at least a lot of general NBA people, aren't necessarily interested in it, and I get it, but every team, I think, every fan can look at their team and say this. Boy, go back. I can give you a spider web of scenarios of how this past season played out with or without the Harden trade, with it and what pieces are involved in it, and then what things end up looking like when you get to the playoffs, even with the injuries that they sustain. So it's one of those weird things that I'll probably mull around in the back of my head for a long time. But at the end of the day, Spencer Dinwiddie, obviously, as you said, opting out, will be moving on. It's just a matter now, and we'll get into it, of what can the Nets do to maybe do right by Spencer Dinwiddie while also doing right by themselves.
All right, we're going to get into all that. And like I said, it gets a little bit into the weeds here in a minute with what the different options are with Spencer Dinwiddie. First, I have to talk to you about the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. That one's easy. Spencer Dinwiddie about to get absolutely paid, worth every penny, worked hard to make sure he could get this long-term contract, secure the future, play with all the joy, happiness, and enjoyment that you like to see. Like all the reasons that we just said, Spencer Dinwiddie, massive improvement over the last couple years, knows his value, going to go get his value, and that is why he is the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. Joy creates success. Enjoyment isn't the end game, it's the whole game. Congratulations, Spencer Dinwiddie. You are the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week.
All right, so we turn our attention now to to the weeds. We're going to get into the weeds and try to figure out how all these pieces work. Fans have said, and then as you and I started to research it and realized how delicate these things can be, a lot of fans have just said, oh, well, the sign and trade is great. And it's true. It can helps get Spencer Dinwiddie to a location of his choosing. It can help get the Nets value in return for Spencer Dinwiddie. I'll give the footnote piece as far as the sign and trade goes from a Nets standpoint, and just from a player standpoint. And then there's all the kind of complicated details after that that we'll see how far we go into them. But just quickly, by being the team that currently has him under contract, the Brooklyn Nets and Spencer Dinwiddie, they can afford to extend him in years and dollar amount than any other team on the open market would be able to offer Spencer Dinwiddie. They also can help him by being able to dictate where he goes. So the Nets in this offseason can sign Spencer Dinwiddie to a 3-4 year deal, upwards maybe of $20 million, depending on how you feel about the market, and then also go to team X, Y, or Z. Spencer Dinwiddie's from LA. We've heard those rumors out there, and get him to the place that he wants to go. But Doug, Doug, watch this. I'll kick it to you. Why is it not as easy as just saying, right, so just sign him to a great contract and then go ahead and reach out to the Lakers and say, let's go ahead and wrap this thing up. We're all set here.
Yeah, okay, so I'm going to answer that in 1 second, but before we get to that, I just want to mention one more thing about the sign and trade. The sign and trade is, and you basically said this, but I just want to reiterate it. The reason you continue to hear about sign and trades, and you mentioned it, is because the team can offer more money and more years. The flexibility around, like, this is why it's an interesting thing with the CBA. It's what keeps players incentivized to not have acrimonious kind of exits from your team, keep things amicable along the way. The reason it's a good thing, I think, the way the CBA works in this way, because it means that you can kind of go to your team and say, "Hey, I know you can't afford me anymore, but we can still work together." It's weird. It's like not like a function that you see in a lot of other sports, right? Usually it's like, "Hey, I'm on the open market now. You can be the highest bidder. Oh, you're not going to pay me? See you later, and I'll just go talk to everyone else." It's interesting that it helps the team that made the original talent evaluation piece correctly, but now can no longer, like, is almost a victim of their own success by being good at it. You know, like the Nets were good in identifying Spencer Dinwiddie as like this totally underappreciated asset. He figured it out. He became that. And then because he became so good and the Nets became good, they can no longer afford him anymore. So that the fact that you are, as a team, afforded the ability to sort of still in some way capitalize on that, I think is actually a good thing. It's interesting. You just don't see it in a lot of other sports. It's a good thing.
It should be. But yeah, it is a good thing, and teams should be rewarded for it. I think the slightly humorous part from a Nets standpoint is, we just said, Spencer Dinwiddie, kind of this unknown thing in Detroit. Like, Detroit drafted him. Usually it can be some of the weaker teams in the league that, as these guys come up, this is a way that if Spencer Dinwiddie was still on the Detroit Pistons and had gotten the second deal, et cetera, well, they might be a team about to go into a rebuild mode, or they're, you know, figuring some things out. And now they get the extra benefit of being able to move an asset that they otherwise could just see walk away. And then it helps build up that team. I do find it a little bit funny that the Nets, because they're good, because their scouting department gets it, they went and got Spencer Dinwiddie, and now they get to benefit from pulling a guy, as we said this before with the Nets, off a scrap heap. Now they're going to turn it into extra value. And this is what the better teams in the league do, and why, even when some, you know, people say, "Oh, the best teams in the league," and then they get to get better. Well, yeah, but there's a function here. I know the Nets signed the superstars. They also found the proverbial diamond in the roughs, shined them up, and now they're going to sell them at market for exponentially higher than what they bought for.
Yeah, so, right, and that's going to be the hope. Now, here's the problem with the Dinwiddie thing. So, where you said, and you mentioned the Clippers and the Lakers. So, there's a thought around the league that he wants to return to L.A. That's where I think he's from. And he went to Colorado.
At least from California.
Yeah, California. Right, but he did his rehab work on the ACL in California, and there's a belief that he would like to return to California in some fashion. That's just, you know, speculation. I'm not quoting Spencer Dinwiddie here. That's just, you know, rumblings you hear around the league, that he would like to go to one of these two LA teams, either the Lakers or the Clippers. Now, the problem here, from a sign-and-trade standpoint, as far as Adam and I can understand it, and we read a lot about this, is that the sign and trade is going to be it's not it's going to be as easy as, "Oh, we'll sign and trade and we'll get Kuzma back, or we're going to sign and trade and get, you know, something else back from the Lakers." The Lakers, because of the nature of their cap situation, are hard capped already, and signing a player that's going to take, even if it's on a better contract from another team, signing a player that's going to take you over the hard cap and into up to the apron is really kind of like a non-starter. So I think while the Lakers would like to have him, it's actually very difficult for them to do a sign and trade to bring, almost like, frankly, nearly impossible for them to do a sign and trade for Dinwiddie that would not give them like significant luxury tax implications, because they're going to already be up against it. They're going to have probably Montrezl Harrell opt into his contract. By the way, players opting in, it's very funny about the opt-in thing. This is a quick side note, is when you hear about a player opt-in, it's almost always like the team like, "Damn it," right? Because like a player only typically opts in when they just take a look, quick glance around, like, "Oof, man, I'm not going to get this anywhere else," you know, like, and they just do it. So it is the opposite of this on the team side, is when you don't get this right and you have players opt in, you're usually like kind of kicking yourself a little bit. But anyway, that is the problem, as we understand it, with the Lakers and the Clippers, is that both of them are so deep into the tax at this point, and are going to be deeper into the tax next year, that signing and trading a guy like Dinwiddie is not as easy as like, "Oh, we'll sign and trade Dinwiddie and then we'll give you back Dennis Schroeder," even, like something like that, right? Like the money simply doesn't work. And while I think it's possible, it's incredibly unlikely that is what happens without getting a third team involved. Like, because you need to get the third team involved to really lessen the money and be able to ship certain other assets out. And so just from the Lakers and Clippers. There's other teams, there's other possibilities here, but just from a Lakers and Clippers standpoint, from what we understand now, it's very unlikely, I think, that happens, where you get a player back, right? And frankly, you might not get anything back, because they actually have to send money out. So I think we can maybe take that one and say, from a Nets perspective, that just might not happen from a sign and trade. Doesn't mean he can't go to those teams and like sign some other contract. It just means from the mechanism around the sign and trade, it's not looking all that likely that the LA teams are going to be a landing spot for him.
Well, and that's why today on the road to the finals, our NBA playoff coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, and why I'm predicting that there'll be a, I'll call it, quote, surprise team when we talk about the sign and trade options for Spencer Dinwiddie and the Brooklyn Nets. As you know, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. And at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. I think you're right. You know, we talk about the Lakers. Now, you mentioned the third team, and this is always what you see in these trades. Usually, the third team is a bad team. It's a team that's willing to take on a bloated contract. Now, when you mention a guy like Schroeder for the Lakers, who said he wants a $100 million contract, maybe there's a third team that helps facilitate that. One of the other little footnotes around these are all of these players, Schroeder, who's going to be a free agent, or Spencer Dinwiddie, who's opting out of his final year of his contract, they still are represented on the books by a number for the teams that they're currently a member of, technically. Like the Lakers, I think it's $24 million is represented on the books for Schroeder. For the Nets, I think it's at $13 million for Spencer Dinwiddie. So these figures exist there in some capacity, because I know someone on Twitter was saying, like, what does all this look like and how does the money work? There's already a number that exists on the cap for the next season potentially. And then depending on how the moves are made, you'll see those numbers get adjusted around the league. But short of a third team getting involved, the interesting question I wanted to ask you was, then everyone kind of says that the Nets, obviously, they did right by Spencer Dinwiddie. He was good for them. If you're at a place when you're the Nets now, do you look at it and say, we want to get value back? Maybe it's an asset. I'll get into a couple of teams that I think could be interesting for him to land in if he's willing to, and he wants to also get the paydays after. But if you're the Nets, is there any world where you say, well, we can sign and trade you, it's not going to be able to be to LA. If he really wants to go to LA, would the Nets just let him walk away? Understanding, depending on what you're really going to get back in return, even in draft capital or otherwise, that's the question I wonder, because if the Nets are that well-run organization and well-regarded, as a lot of players refer to them, there's a world where you say, okay, Spencer, go get your best contract. It's going to be shorter years, may not be as much money, but if you want to get home, then this is your best path to do that.
All right, yeah, I'm going to answer that in 1 second. First, going to talk to you about our friends over at Bet Online. NBA Finals starting tonight. On Bet Online, Suns -190 for the series. Looks like Giannis is doubtful for that game. Bucks -190 on Bet Online to win the NBA Finals. Chris Paul walking in there on Bet Online as a favorite. Basketball playoffs rolling through the championship. Baseball always also in full swing. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. It's your chance to get into the game action as these teams roll through their seasons or roll through the championships. Head on over to Bet Online. Sign up today, that's totally free, but you're going to want to make a deposit, and when you do, you're going to get a 50% welcome bonus, but you have to use the promo code LOCKEDON, just like our podcast network. BetOnline, all the great sporting news, all the great sign-up bonuses, all the great contest information, promo code LOCKEDON, 50% welcome bonus, BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
And of course, got to tell you about our friends over at rockauto.com. You can save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30, 50, or even 100% more for the same parts from chain stores or car dealerships? You can go ahead over to rockauto.com, find all the great parts and selections for your vehicle, whether it's going to be a new alternator, a car mat, a steering wheel cover, a new tail lamp, any of the things that you're going to need for your vehicle. I go over there, I find parts, it's easy to navigate because I am, just like you, sir, a do-it-yourselfer. Rock Auto is a family-run business serving the do-it-yourselfers like us for over 20 years. Rock Auto prices are also always reliably low for every single customer. You can go ahead and head over to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. I know. So go. I mean, so I want to get your take on that as far as what you think the Nets would do. And then we really get into some of the most important stuff about potential replacements and a couple other things here as far as moving on from Spencer Dinwiddie, because we both agree he's not going to be back on the Nets. Let's just, I feel like we established that along the way here. He's not returning to Brooklyn.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's almost any world, unless the market totally craters, which I don't think it's going to, because if you look at the list of available free agents, it's actually pretty light on guards this season.
Yes.
And so you know, just like the loose list of like best, it's a pretty weak free agent class to begin with. And some of these guys, like Chris Paul, is almost definitely going to resign with the Suns. Like, he's a guy, if I'm just like looking through the guards, Lowry, he's getting a little long in the tooth. The team that he goes to probably looks a little different than a team that Spencer Dinwiddie goes to, right? Conley, I would think that he's going to resign with the Jazz. So just rolling through some of the guys who like qualify as point guards, I don't think that they're going to affect Dinwiddie's market all that much. I think that whatever team he goes to is in a slightly different situation, and he's going to be cheaper than those three guys, almost definitely. And so it's just like a different situation, right? So he's in a good spot here. He exists right below that group, but enough that he can improve a team and more than the Nets can afford. Now, if we agree that the sign and trade might be a little difficult with those big teams, you can still sign and trade with other teams. Like, there's plenty of other examples out there. We just focused on those two because that would have been the word about where he kind of wanted to land. So the three things that can happen: one, look, we're not going to go through all these fake trades. We're not a fake trade group. You know, maybe around the trade deadline, if there's something like firm, we can start talking about it. But I'm not going to start. You came to the wrong podcast if we're going to start whipping up like three team trades around Spencer Dinwiddie. That's just not going to happen. But I will say the things that we can keep an eye on that would really help the Nets. One, frankly, just getting a trade exception for the Nets actually would be pretty valuable for them, because to be able to absorb. So that basically means they sign him. They sign and trade him now, and they just take back a trade exception for the money. And say, hey, we're going to sit on this. Now, often trade exceptions don't work out the way you think you're going to, because you have, you know, $18 million trade exception, and there's very few times where another team just wants to unload an $18 million player that you would want, right? So that's just not for nothing. So that's not, it's not perfect, but it can sometimes allow you to get, you can get veterans that maybe have overplayed or underplayed their contract, but you could still use, right? That's where a trader player exception could use. You can actually pile together money in TPEs where it doesn't have to be just for one player. It can be for multiple, right? And so as long as you keep the money of multiple players underneath the trade exception, it can just be a way to even out the money. So while you never really get the full 18, like, I'm just making the number 18 million up for Dinwiddie. It could be whatever he ends up signing for. You're almost definitely not going to get that amount of player back in actual value, but you can get more than nothing, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
this is where, you know, the Celtics get Fournier last year and he fits into the Hayward trade exception. It's like, is Fournier as good as Hayward? Of course not, but they were losing Hayward anyway, and so now you can slot somebody else in, and where you don't have to send back equal assets, right? So there's going to be value. I think most likely that's where we see end up happening with him, is that he gets signed and traded to somewhere, and the Nets maybe get like a low piece of draft capital and the player exception. And I know that's not exciting for Nets fans to hear. I will say getting picks back for the Nets is actually pretty important now, just because they've unloaded all of them for Harden. But I think that's like the unsexy thing that's going to happen here with Dinwiddie. And while it's not going to look exciting on paper, I think that'll like just be the reality of where they are.
Yeah, and you know, right now, because what we'll get into as we approach the draft at the end of the month, we'll talk a little bit again about looking at the draft and how you can replace some things that you're maybe going to lose and improve this team. The Nets hold a late first round pick plus 3 second round picks. So to your point, when you add in that extra asset, an extra draft capital, it just means the Nets, as we've seen Sean Marks be able to do, move around the board, shift pieces, you know, make the moves necessary to improve the roster on a year-to-year basis. So anything they can get back obviously has value to them. A couple of I'm not going to get into it, but a team like Dallas is a spot that I thought pre-hearing the LA rumors that might make a lot of sense for Spencer Dinwiddie, for Dallas to get somebody alongside Luka, especially a team that maybe has some movable parts. And that's where we talk about like for like, but getting a player off of any team around the league that improves the Nets, and we probably would say the most glaring is getting a little more length, getting a little bit more perimeter defense. So how some of these scenarios play out, it's not going to necessarily be the one-to-one of, well, we need another guard to lead our second unit. It can just be, do we improve the team somewhere? But I do like your thinking on getting the player exemption and then figuring out from there, how do we acquire a player that maybe opts into the final year of a contract, like you mentioned, right? You're getting yourself a little bit overpaid. The team hoped you hadn't opted in, and now the Nets can come along and maybe facilitate a trade. The only other thing that I'll throw out as far as replacing Spencer Dinwiddie, you went through some of those higher names. The other ones that maybe to keep an eye on, depending on how the offseason goes and where they're at, and these aren't in any necessarily order as far as what I would prefer, but Lou Williams, Patty Mills, Brad Wanamaker, and even Dellavedova. Those are all names that are going to be potentially out there on the market. Now, where are they in their careers? Where does the market form for them as far as being able to get their next contract? I'm not sure. But when the one guy that did jump out at me, depending on what Milwaukee does and how things go, you know, Dellavedova is 31 years old. He does give you high defensive upside. Those are the kind of names, I think, if you're Nets fans, you should be looking at least more in that tier of players, because some of those other top guys, even a Mike Connolly, a player like that comes on the MLE or something because they want to get the chip as well. But a lot of these dudes still have things left, you know, something left in the tank.
Yeah, Connolly. I was just going to stop right there. There's no way Connolly's doing that. But I get what you're saying.
Terrible name to use, I know.
Yeah, yeah, I get what you're saying in terms of like the overall gestalt of what you mean. I just wanted to I hate to interrupt you, buddy, but that was when I was like, well, hold on a second. Don't want anyone thinking that that's going to, like, that's not going to happen.
Yes, point being, all of those top tier players, all those guys that you mentioned before, they're not signing minimum contracts. They're getting one more payday in their career. Is the point that I was going for. So all these other names, these are the guys you have to think about. These are the, and by the way, and it's not a bad thing. They can improve your team. But now the question is, we'll close out here as we get a little bit long. What do you want as far as replacing Dinwiddie when you think about bringing in another guard to this team specifically? What are you looking for? Are you looking to one-to-one replace a guy that can be an offensive explosion for times for you, that can carry the offense in the second unit? Or are you looking at this roster and saying, well, where do we need to improve? And how do we just get better at that position overall, knowing that, presuming health, we have two incredibly high-level scorers in Kyrie and Harden there already at those spots?
Well, I think we've seen that the Nets are weirdly, I hate to kind of hedge my bets here, but the Nets are in a position where kind of anybody helps, but for totally different reasons, right? So Spencer would have helped last year because he would have just, in the times where, you know, Harden and Kyrie specifically were out, they would have just put another ball handler on the court where you turn those like Chioza and Mike James late minutes into Spencer Dinwiddie is like such a massive upgrade that he would have just helped there. Now the help gets diminished when all of them are healthy. But I guess my point is the Nets are in a position where kind of anybody helps, because it's either you complement the superstars really well, like you're like a Jeff Green, you're a wing defender, and you're going to really help with the late deep playoff run. But if you're a Dinwiddie or someone like that, you actually help regular season a lot by just allowing kind of tons of rest and not worrying about overextending anyone's specifically like on-ball load during the season. So
right.
I guess my answer is kind of anybody works in this scenario, especially to start the year. And I actually think to start the year, for the Nets perspective, you probably just are to start like playing like sort of a regular season game, because as we saw, the ease with which it was to add functional pieces later means you can kind of just play the long game early. I mean, don't forget, I mean, they added Blake Griffin, who had immense value for them in the playoffs. They added LaMarcus Aldridge and just got very, frankly, you know, unlucky, and thank God he's fine. So I'm only saying unlucky in the sense of like the signing. I mean, he's very lucky that they figured out the health thing. But it's easy to forget, like, that was another guy they added for just almost nothing, right? Because so I think early in the season, you're looking for, you know, who kind of helps you get through the 82 games, and then late, only because we saw that it was very easy to add those other pieces to a team that's very good, right? And so, and we've just seen time and time again now with these veterans, the ease at which it is to add veterans who maybe have like overplayed or underplayed their current contract, but are now willing to go and do something good for someone else, i.e., you know, Nick Batum just got crazy great minutes for the Clippers, right? Like the Hornets are playing a majority of his salary last year because they just couldn't they just couldn't wait to dump him. So I think that those guys for a playoff run exist. And so I guess my long this is my long way to say, kind of anybody in that spot, the Nets have shown the ability to develop them. And so I think they are afforded some flexibility. This is the flexibility you're afforded when your three guys are so good, right? That can do so much for you that just after that, adding other players, there's ability for other players to help in so many different ways that you can kind of just go and say best guy available rather than worry exactly how he's going to fit into the team.
Right. You don't have to worry about reaching. You don't have to worry about overpaying. You just say, this is our market. This is our value. Right. Who do we bring in that we know will be a good contributor for us because of how we're constructed?
Totally. All right. We're going to get out of here. We're going to talk about, we'll come back tomorrow and talk about the first game of the finals, what we saw in the Suns Bucks. Doesn't look like Giannis is going to play. Was ruled doubtful, but we'll come back and talk about that game. Kind of, yeah, we'll work it into how the Nets kind of would have fared and like what we would have seen from the game as well. And then we'll be back again on Thursday. We're going to talk about Joe Harris's offseason, what to expect from him, what the Nets can, you know, where they are with Joe Harris, because that became a point of much consternation over the course of the playoffs. Rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. Helps the podcast continue to climb as we go through the offseason. Rate and review wherever you listen.
And of course, right now, you can be listening to the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 presented by Locked On and Odyssey. It's featuring analysis from the GOAT of NBA mock drafts, Chad Ford, and Odyssey NBA experts Brian Scalabrine and former general manager Ryan McDonough. Our Locked On local experts will be making selections and trades for your favorite basketball team, the Brooklyn Nets, as well throughout the entire week-long special. It's wrapping up as we move along, so go ahead and search for the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. Odyssey is your audio home for the sports, podcast, music, and news that matters to you. That's A-U-D-A-C-E. Not true. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y, Odyssey. And feel free to go ahead. We fired up the old Instagram as well for the Locked On Nets. You can search and follow there, where I'll throw out some just stats and basic things about some replacement players for Dinwiddie, maybe about some trade partners as well. Easy to get a lot of information out over there. Give your feedback, and we'll touch back on Spencer Dinwiddie, obviously. But because we assume it's the fond farewell, we bid adieu to the entrepreneur and wish him happy trails wherever he lands.
Oh, are you one of the great American poets today? Good enough. Okay. That's Adam Edelman.
Aren't I?
One of the great American poets. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.